In this part of Focus 580, we'll be talking about the recent conflict that's been going on over the past few months in Macedonia. The government there, for about 5 months now, has been battling with a guerrilla group, the National Liberation Army. The NLA is made up of Macedonians who are ethnic Albanian, fighting, so they say, for greater rights for Macedonia's Albanian minority. Albanians constitute a third of the population of Macedonia. Those who follow the politics in this region are concerned that if this fighting were to escalate, that Macedonia's neighbors, Greece, Albania, Yugoslavia, might be drawn into the conflict, and we would suddenly be looking at another Balkan war. This morning, in this part of the show, we'll be trying to talk a little bit about the background to this story, what actually is going on, and how outside parties like the United States might be involved in trying to have a peaceful solution there. And our guest for the program is Charles Kupchin. He's Whitney Shepherdson Senior Fellow and Director of Europe Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations in Washington, D.C. He's also Associate Professor of International Relations at Georgetown University and is an expert on the Balkans and its politics. And as we talk this morning with Professor Kupchin, you should certainly feel free to pick up the telephone and give us a call, ask questions, make comments. All we ask of callers is that they just try to be brief so we can keep things moving along. But anyone's welcome to call. 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, so that means if it would be a long-distance call for you, you can use that number. That's 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. Professor Kupchin, hello.
Good morning.
Thanks for talking with us today.
Sure.
We appreciate it. This fighting started in February, has been now going on for several months. There was a particular flare-up in late March.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it that this started when it did?
There continues to be a debate within Macedonia and the international community over exactly what precipitated the spread of the fighting from Kosovo and southern Serbia south into Macedonia. And I think several things were at play. One was the clamping down by the KFOR, the NATO forces in Kosovo, on the guerrilla activity that was going on both within Kosovo proper and also the Preševo Valley, the area of southern Serbia that was essentially a no-man's land along the Kosovo border. And the guerrillas therefore began to shift some of their operations into northern Macedonia. And then the precipitating factor was the agreement that was reached between Macedonia and Yugoslavia under the new Kostunica government on the border between Serbia and Macedonia. That was a border that was never really demarcated because Milosevic refused to negotiate. And when that border was finally drawn, after about 14 rounds of negotiation, there were some villages that had thought that they were in Kosovo that found themselves in Macedonia. And also, the Kosovars themselves were not involved in that negotiation. It was the Yugoslav government from Belgrade, and that angered the Albanian community because they thought they had a stake in the resolution of that border.
The Albanian rebels say that within Macedonia they face discrimination, and they are fighting for equal rights within Macedonia. The government of Macedonia, for its part, has labeled these folks terrorists and, in fact, said that they're separatists. What they're really interested in is having an Albanian, somehow carving out an Albanian state in this territory where they live. What is there, do you think, on the side of the Albanian, the Macedonian Albanians, any justification for the complaints that they make about their place within Macedonian society?
There's no question that the complaint that they make, and by they I mean the Albanians in general, not the guerrillas, is justified. There is a pervasive discrimination that exists in Macedonia that stems from the wording in the preamble to the constitution down to day-to-day local politics, in which the Albanians, even though they have considerable political rights, are second-class citizens. The guerrillas are, or the NLA as they like to be called, I think are a group that has a divided sense of what they want. Some members of that group are not interested in simply renegotiating the constitution and getting more rights. They're more interested in radicalizing the Albanian population within Macedonia so that eventually you see either the federation, in which Macedonia has a western portion that is primarily Albanian, or even separation and the creation of greater Albania. But fortunately, those more radical ideas do not seem to be catching on with the broader Albanian population in Macedonia. That extremist view is very much the preserve of this small group of people who are trying to stir up trouble.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I suppose some people who study this region say that what's going on here is symptomatic of a much larger problem, something that Europe and the United States have failed to deal with, and that is Albanian nationalism and the desire of Albanian minorities living in a number of these countries to have autonomy to the point of independence. That's certainly what the KLA seemed to be after. Is this really the central issue?
I don't believe so. I think that the talk about Albanian nationalism and the desire for a greater Albania is trumped up. And to say it's the Albanians that are the problem here is to, I think, oversimplify to the point of misconstruing what's going on. I think it's the problem is a wider Balkan problem, and that is that because of the history of the region, the timing of industrialization, the difficult and close linkages between national identity, ethnic identity, and religious identity, ethnicity, culture, and religion are still very much part of politics and passion in that part of the world. That's what caused Yugoslavia to split up. It's what caused the bloodshed in Kosovo and in Bosnia. And right now the question is, will those same forces of identity and the mixing up of politics and religion and culture cause a similar splitting up or bloodshed in Macedonia? And Macedonia has really been an island of relative calm in the midst of a storm, because Macedonia separated from Yugoslavia peacefully in the early 1990s. The Yugoslav army essentially took its guns and left without firing a shot. And despite the fact that there was a war going on in Bosnia and in Kosovo, Albanians and Macedonians have gotten along reasonably well. I mean, if you, before this recent fighting, had gone to, say, Tetovo, a large city in western Macedonia, which is the majority Albanian but has lots of Macedonian Slavs, you would walk around comfortably. You would not feel the hatred that you would feel, for example, if you walked in Sarajevo from the Bosnian community into the Serb community, or for that matter in Jerusalem, if you walked from the Jewish quarter to the Arab quarter. And so I think the criminal part of this is that could be spoiled, that the same poison that caused ethnic unraveling in Bosnia could spread to Macedonia, and that's why we're at such a delicate stage in this crisis.
Yeah, but I guess that some people at least find some reason to be optimistic about the possibility of things working out here based on the fact that things before were relatively stable. It was a multi-ethnic state, and certainly that while the Macedonian Albanians might well have complaints, it was nothing like what was going on in neighboring Kosovo, for example.
That's correct. There are reasons to be optimistic, including the fact that there has been this peaceful past, including the fact that we now see a broad unity government that includes strong representation from the Albanian community, and that we're beginning to see the Macedonian government slowly, but nevertheless clearly move in the direction of introducing very needed reforms. And those include recognizing the Albanians as a constituent nation inside Macedonia, being more forward-thinking on the question of education. One of the main complaints that the Albanians have had is that they have not had access to higher education. And that was especially true during the Milosevic clampdown on the Albanian language university in Pristina in Kosovo, because that's where most of the Macedonian Albanians went. And after that was closed by Milosevic, they really had very little opportunity for a university education, because this university in Skopje, which is a, you know, reasonably good institution, all the classes are in Macedonian. And a lot of the Albanians simply didn't speak Macedonian well enough to pass the entrance exams. What we're now beginning to see in Tetovo is the legalization and the expansion of an Albanian language university that will help the Albanian community develop skills and become much more socially mobile. Mm.
I should introduce again our guest. We're talking with Charles Kupchan. He is Associate Professor of International Relations at Georgetown University and is also a senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations in Washington, D.C. We're talking about recent events in Macedonia, and your questions are welcome. 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. You just a moment ago made reference to the coalition government in Macedonia and the possibility that there can be a peaceful solution to the complaints that the Macedonian Albanians worked out. It seems, though, just recently that this conflict came close to pulling this coalition apart when the Albanians that were involved in the government wanted to make an agreement, wanted to come to an agreement with the NLA, but the Slavic members of the government didn't. And when they found out that the Albanians had been talking with the NLA, they threatened to pull the government apart.
That's correct. The position of the Macedonian government, and particularly its Slavic parties, is that the NLA should not have a seat at the table and should not have a voice in these negotiations, because that would be to essentially cater to their terrorist tactics and the use of violence. And I think that's a reasonable position to take. And the fact that there had been this negotiation ongoing with the help, incidentally, of an American who was, I think, sort of getting out there in front of his marching orders, an American diplomat, that did cause a real problem. They have since walked back from that, and I think the unity government is hanging in there, at least for now. And that really is very important because of the need to create and to sustain a sense that these two parties can live together, these two groupings, that is the Albanian and Macedonian Slav parties, because that sends a signal to the people, the Slavs and the Albanians, that they too can live together. And again, I think the real danger here is that something happens in a city, that somebody goes and shoots 550 or so Slavs and writes NLA on spray paint, or that a paramilitary Slav group, not acting at the behest of the government, goes and shoots 50 Albanians. If that were to happen, then you really do face this problem of a contagion that becomes unstoppable.
There is just this interesting little corner of the story, and I don't know if this is getting too deep into the details, but you just mentioned it, the fact that this man, Robert Froek, who was working with the OSCE, the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, apparently got involved in this mediation seemingly on his own, because when the word got out that he had been involved, it seemed like everybody was running from it and him as fast as they possibly could.
Yeah.
What leads someone to apparently take it on himself, or maybe we don't know because he hasn't really talked about it, what leads someone in a position like this to go out on a limb like this?
Mm-hmm. Froek is someone who has had a long experience in the Balkans in various capacities and has therefore developed a strong set of contacts with key players in the region. And my guess is that he felt that he could cash in on those contacts to try to break the logjam and push this issue forward. And apparently, although the story has yet to fully come out, he kind of did so on a freelance basis. And that's why OSCE, NATO, the U.S. government, the State Department kind of backed off and said, hey, we didn't authorize him to do this. But again, you know, the Balkans march to a somewhat different drummer. A lot of it does depend upon patronage systems and contacts and backroom deals, and my sense is that that he was working the system, probably with good intentions, but ended up getting caught in an awkward position.
When we look at the NLA, the National Liberation Army, how many of these people are, in fact, as far as we know, are in fact Macedonians, and has there been some connections established between the Kosovo Liberation Army and the National Liberation Army of Macedonia?
I don't think anybody has a real accurate sense of who belongs and to the NLA and exactly where do they come from. My guess is that one has a real mixture of Macedonians, Kosovar Albanians, some Albanians that have come from Albania proper, and some Albanians that have come from Urbana, Illinois, and other parts of the diaspora who have gone to Kosovo or gone to Macedonia to join the cause. I think that the one of the most important issues is, are there any Macedonians involved in this, or is this simply a group that came in from the outside? And I think there's good, strong evidence that there are Macedonians involved, and that that is a cause for being very careful about this, because that means that there is a disaffected group, disaffected enough that they're ready to take arms. And that's, I think, again, the danger here, that disaffected group could get larger and larger should the fighting spread and should the two main ethnic groups start to take matters into their own hands.
Mm-hmm. I was interested in Ray, back at the beginning when you talked about some of the reasons that this fighting started when it did, mm-hmm. that one was a crackdown on rebels within, if I'm quoting you correctly, and if I'm not, you should say so, a crackdown on rebels in Kosovo.
Yeah.
And I'm interested in your analysis, because I have also read some suggestion that part of the problem is that we have not been sufficiently tough on rebels within Kosovo, like the KLA, and that one of the solutions to the problem there in northern Macedonia is to do what we can to tighten that border so that fighters and weapons cannot come into Macedonia from Kosovo.
That's correct, and the picture that you have to keep in your mind is that, you know, we had the war in Kosovo, and then everyone is focused on Milosevic. When is he going to go? Will he be tried for war crimes? When do we rebuild the infrastructure of Serbia? And because everyone's attention was riveted on that question, less attention was focused on the actual development politically, institutionally, militarily in Kosovo proper. And then all of a sudden, you know, we kind of woke up one morning and there were Albanian rebels in Serbia taking shots at Serbian policemen. They were trying to kind of expand the borders of Kosovo into areas of Serbia that were predominantly Albanian. And then suddenly, all of a sudden, NATO has to sort of get its act together and try to tighten up the ship. And the other problem is that the border between Kosovo and Serbia, between Kosovo and Macedonia, in part because, as I mentioned earlier in the show, it was never firmly drawn, has been very porous. And you have people going back and forth on trails through the woods, lots of arms going back and forth, also coming from Albania into Macedonia proper. It's just been very difficult to patrol. It's hilly territory. It's wooded territory. And the other piece of the puzzle here is that that's part of the reason that no one really knows what percentage of Macedonia is Albanian. And that's because a lot of Albanians have come into the country and came into the country during the war, during the bombing. Some of them have stayed. Some of them moved in with relatives. They're not registered. They don't have Macedonian citizenship. But one of the things that scares the hell out of the Macedonian Slavs is, are they going to wake up one morning and find that their country has become more than 50% Albanian?
Mm-hmm. And that this, of course, suggests the difficulty. And it's all well and good to say that NATO should police these borders and prevent people from moving back and forth and weaponry from moving back and forth. But looking at the real situation on the ground, it seems virtually to be an impossible task. There's no way that we could seal those borders so that it'd be impossible for people to go back and forth.
No. Sealing is impossible. Stepping up the patrols and trying to shut down some of the networks and the cells that have been developed, that is possible, and some of it's going on. And a lot of it is the use of intelligence, both satellite and on-the-ground intelligence, with the U.S. backstopping and NATO backstopping Macedonian, the government and the military forces. But I have to say that part of the problem here is that the United States and the Europeans, although less so, are very tentative about this. They're not interested in increasing the troops, the troop level in Kosovo. The Bush administration has essentially taken a hands-off approach to the crisis in Macedonia and basically said to the European Union, here, you guys take care of this. And the ability to create, to get enough forces and enough willpower from NATO is a constraint on shutting down the border and trying to make sure that this revolt doesn't spread.
We are just about the midpoint of this conversation here on Focus 580, and one thing I'd like to do just real quick is to bring you up to date on some weather information. There is a flash flood warning that's in effect for a number of counties in Illinois, and these that we're specifically interested in fall in our severe weather coverage area. They are Livingston, Ford, and Iroquois counties in Indiana, and that will be until noon, and then Benton County until noon. A flash flood watch is in effect for these counties in our severe weather coverage area: Douglas, Coles, Edgar, Macon, Moultrie, Shelby, Cumberland, and Clark in Illinois, and Warren, Fountain, and Vermilion counties in Indiana. So we just want to make sure that you're aware of that, because we have had a lot of rain and we're expecting more, and flooding has occurred. There have been some road closures, and we're expecting the possibility of more flooding related to rain. So we definitely want you to keep aware of what's going on. And again, remember, this is a flash flood warning for in Indiana, Livingston, Ford, and Iroquois counties until noon, and Benton until noon. And we'll have more information on the weather for you coming up as part of the afternoon magazine a little bit later here on AM 580. Well, also, I should introduce again our guest for this part of Focus. We're talking with Charles Kupchan from the Council on Foreign Relations in Washington, D.C. He's a senior fellow there. He also is associate professor of international relations at Georgetown University. And we're talking about recent events in Macedonia. And questions are welcome. If you'd like to call in, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. A couple of other things worth noting that apparently have contributed to the timing on all of this. When we get back to this question, well, why is it that around the beginning of the year, say in February or so, that this really started to become an issue? A couple of things happened. First, there was the fall of Milosevic, and there was the change of administrations here in this country. And with the fall of Milosevic, the U.S. interest in this region changed a great deal from our focusing on him to our wanting to support the new government in Belgrade. It seemed that the issue of Kosovo just wasn't quite as important anymore. A new administration comes in really seemingly less interested in international involvement, and all of that seems to have led the people in this region to, first of all, to want to get some attention for themselves and their issues, but also perhaps to feel that because the United States really wasn't paying very much attention, there wouldn't be much in the way of consequences for them to make this move to violence. At least that's the kind of analysis that I've seen from some folks who have looked at this conflict. Do you think that that's fairly well on target?
I think that the fall of Milosevic was consequential, but perhaps for a somewhat different reason, and that is that in Kosovo, the Albanians essentially saw the continuation of the Milosevic regime as a good thing from their perspective, because it increased the possibility or the likelihood that they would attain formal independence, because it would be impossible to strike a bargain with Milosevic. It was unthinkable that Kosovo would stay in a Serbia that continued to be run by this guy. Now that he's gone and you're beginning to see a democratic regime emerge, the case for the establishment of Kosovo as a separate state and its separation from Serbia becomes less compelling. And so I think that part of what happened here is the Albanians, and particularly the more extremist Albanians, and it's important to remember that a moderate leadership did win the elections in Kosovo, the more extreme Albanians kind of said, hey, this is not good for us. This is going to forestall the move to independence. And particularly if you were in some of the villages in northern Macedonia or that are now in northern Macedonia that thought that they were in Kosovo and that Kosovo would ultimately be independent, then you were particularly upset by seeing the border drawn and finding yourself in a country where suddenly you were a minority and a Slavic to a Slavic majority.
How important do you think is the fact that when the Bush administration came in, their foreign policy priorities were very different than the Clinton administration's, and it seemed that as one ranked the parts of the world that we were really concerned with, that the Balkans slipped down on the list?
Mm-hmm. I think that in the big sense, it's a critical shift in foreign policy, and one that is in my mind too premature, in that the Balkans are at a very critical stage, not just in Macedonia, but in Bosnia, in Kosovo. There are very difficult questions that loom on the horizon about opening the question of border changes. The Dayton Accord, for example, in Bosnia was supposed to, over time, rebuild a multi-ethnic state. Well, you know, it's not really working. The Croats and the Bosnian Muslims and the Serbs just simply are not getting along and rebuilding multi-ethnic ties. And so this is an awkward time for the United States to begin to say, we're getting tired of this, and Europe, you're on your own. My own view is that over the long run, that is the likely trajectory of U.S. policy, and that's simply because Europe has been a success. The EU's wealth is about to surpass the wealth of the United States. The EU has pacified Western Europe and is heading into Central Europe to do the same. And it's simply going to be hard for American politicians to stand up on TV and say, we still need to do the Kosovos of the world. There is still a German problem. We need to be Europe's pacifier. So although I agree with the long-term vision of a Europe that's less dependent upon American force, I think that the transition to that more self-reliant Europe has to be handled with extreme care.
We have a caller to talk with. Let's do that in Champaign, line one. Hello.
Yes, Professor. I'm sympathetic, I guess, to some degree with the Baltic situation. I think it spawned the First World War, and apparently it's in a state of turmoil now. I have difficulty, however, in how we characterize the actors. Sometimes the actors are good people, like the NRA were once characterized as freedom fighters when they were fighting Milosevic. Now some might characterize them as terrorists as they fight the Macedonian government. In a situation fraught with all of this difficulty of characterization, long-standing animosity among these various people, how is it that we can commit forces there and hopefully keep these people from each other's throats in a practical sense, whereby there's an end game and an out strategy?
Mm-hmm.
And two, what is truly, in your estimation, the national security interest of the United States in having a presence in the Baltics, or having a Baltic situation where people can live in relative harmony?
Yeah. That's a very good question, and I think the issue that you started out with, you know, who's the good guy and who's the bad guy, is very relevant, because in my mind it is not the purpose of the U.S. or the international community to say we are for the Albanians and against the Serbs, we're for the Bosniaks and against the Croats. The point ought to be we are against whoever is doing the killing, whoever is using ethnicity as a social and political cleavage and the basis for war. And that's precisely why we used to be sort of defending the Albanian community, even though they were fighting, because they were trying to fight discrimination in Kosovo, and now we're sort of trying to rein them in, and that's because they're the ones that are trying to bring the fighting to Macedonia. On the broader question of U.S. interests, I think that precisely for the reasons that you cite, the extent to which the Balkans have served as a flashpoint for broader European wars, the U.S. does have an interest in stopping the conflict, and particularly in stopping its southward spread. Because as was mentioned at the very beginning of the show, Bulgaria, Greece, and Albania all have testy historic ties to Macedonia. And if Macedonia were to start to come apart, it would be very hard to prevent it from spreading further into the Balkan Peninsula. And if Greece got involved, it may well be that Turkey were to get involved. And so stopping that from happening, buying time for these communities to stabilize and rebuild ties is the purpose of intervention. We can't bring these countries back together again, but what we can do is try to keep the peace in the meantime.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you for the call. And others are welcome here in Champaign-Urbana, the number 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line, good anywhere that you can hear us, around Illinois, Indiana, anywhere the signal will travel. That is 800-222-9455. I think that some people might say that the ability of, say, the United States or of European countries to assist in this problem is complicated by our unwillingness to meet with the NLA, the National Liberation Army, for fear that it will somehow legitimize them. Mm-hmm. Is that indeed a problem, and is that wrong-headed for us to say, well, there are some parties to this conflict that we're not going to have anything to do with?
I'm in favor of a policy that basically says you lay down your arms and then you can be a party to the negotiations. But as long as your main purpose is to spread fighting and breed hatred between Albanians and Slavs, we want nothing to do with you. I think that's an effective way of trying to disarm the NLA. And I also think that the fact that there is in Macedonia a strong political infrastructure among the Albanian community, that they are represented in parliament and in the cabinet, and that, for example, Arben Jaferi, who is the leader of the main coalition partner, the Albanian party in government, he used to be the leader of what was the main sort of radical Albanian party. And the fact that he is now in the government, that he has a certain amount of credibility among Albanians as someone who's looking out for their interests, suggests that he and his types ought to be the main interlocutor, and that's the best way to try to engage the Albanian community and make them feel like they are being brought into a multi-ethnic state.
I think some people have also argued that they've taken a look at the resources that the NLA and the government have on each of their sides and have said that neither side is really strong enough to have a decisive military victory. Certainly the NLA is not, but that the government also doesn't really have the resources to crush the NLA. And so some people have argued that one of the things that the outside world can do, Europe, NATO, the United States, is to provide support, not troops, but to provide support material and so forth, mm-hmm. to the Macedonian government aid in their battle with the NLA, and then going back to this very difficult sort of mission that we've talked about before, try to do something with preventing this movement of fighters and arms into Macedonia, either from southern Serbia or particularly from Kosovo.
Yeah. The international community is indeed already providing military support, both concrete and also advice and intelligence, to the Macedonian government, because they realized that if they were to provide some sort of deterrent and containment to the so-called guerrilla fighters, they needed help. And it's sort of a sad story, because one of the nice parts of the history of the breakup of Yugoslavia is that Macedonia sort of stayed out of it. It didn't build up a major army. If you took a plane into Skopje Airport a few years ago, you would have seen the entire Macedonian Air Force, and it consisted of a couple dilapidated Soviet-era helicopters whose rotors were tilting and lying on the ground. And now that's been replaced by some new attack helicopters, and there are arms flowing, and it's sad that had to happen. But the fact of the matter is that the Macedonian army needed some assistance if it was to kind of combat this group. The other thing that's worrisome, and it's exactly what you just pointed out, the amount of armament and ammunition that is being stockpiled in Macedonia, Albania, and Kosovo is quite staggering. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of rounds, millions of rounds, millions of grenades, anti-tank weapons, rifles, Kalashnikovs, and it's extremely hard to counter that, in part because most of this is happening through smuggling and through a lot of arms trading that is going on, coming in from the coast, coming through Montenegro, coming through Albania. And Albania is essentially a state that's not a state. It doesn't have a functioning government. So we are looking at a situation in which the inflow of armaments is quite scary.
Well, about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus 580. Our guest, Charles Kupchan, he is Associate Professor of International Relations at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C. He's also a Senior Fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations. He's Director of Europe Studies there, and we're talking about Macedonia. And questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. How significant a refugee problem has this fighting created?
The villages where the Albanian fighters have lodged themselves are primarily Albanian for obvious reasons. The international community has tried to create pauses in the fighting for those civilians to get out so that they are not killed or caught in the crossfire. The actual numbers, again, it's hard to say because some of them come south towards Skopje, some of them cross the border going north, some of them just go hide in the woods. So I don't think anyone has a good count. But again, it's a situation where you want to not just preserve the civilian lives that are potentially at stake, but to also make sure that you don't end up in a situation in which in a neighboring town where there hasn't been fighting, something happens, a policeman gets shot by an Albanian, and that begins to unravel the tender network of reasonably good ethnic relations.
Mm-hmm. We talked a little bit earlier about the fact that perhaps when we talk about Albanian nationalism, the idea that there are people who want to carve out this greater Albania may be slightly overplayed, mm-hmm. But at the same time that Albanians do have people who are ethnic Albanians living in these as minorities living in these countries do have legitimate complaints. And,
yes.
For example, in Macedonia, the fact that Macedonian is the official language and that makes it difficult for people who want to go to university there. The police force is mostly Slavic, and the Slavic Macedonians have more than 90% of public sector jobs. And it just makes it very difficult for Albanian Macedonians here. If indeed there is desire for change and pressure for greater rights for ethnic Albanians, but short of the support for a kind of a full out war to carve out a territory, what is it that that ethnic Albanians really want?
Mm-hmm. Well, as you pointed out, there's a kind of gap between the appearance of multi-ethnicity and the reality. If you, for example, were to count the number of Albanians in the parliament or the number of Albanians in the cabinet, it looks pretty good. And last count, I think there were 5 of 15 cabinet members that were Albanian. That's a third. That's in rough proportion to the population. If you scratch beneath the surface and look at the police force, municipal government, access to higher education, access to jobs in the public administration, then you get a very different picture. And I think the issue is, can the Macedonian government turn that around and gradually begin to integrate Albanians into this broader Macedonian civil society? And I think part of the trick is, as I mentioned, education, so that the Albanian community has the skills necessary to enter. And part of it is also the broader attitude that the Macedonian Slavs have, and whether they sort of say, yes, let's revise the constitution, but then harbor a sort of quiet discrimination, or whether they attempt to overcome some of that more quiet prejudice. But I'd put the big picture in the following way. Will the Macedonian people, in particular the Slavs, be able to recraft the identity of the state as a whole so that Albanians, even as they see Albania as their motherland, feel that Macedonia is their home country, feel that they belong, feel that they have a stake? And that's something, for example, that has worked well in America, where you can be Italian American, Jewish American, Black American, and still be very much an American. But that took us centuries to get right. And Macedonia is just now embarking on an experiment where they hope to do the same thing, or at least should do the same thing, with their Albanians, as well as their other minorities, because they have quite a few other minority populations, though none come close in number to the Albanians.
Mm-hmm. And I certainly, in a sense, we're going back here, but I do want to maybe come back to the United States here for a moment. There certainly has been criticism of the United States for failing to pay, I shouldn't say exactly the United States, the Bush administration for failing to pay adequate attention to the region. And there was some criticism, for example, in late May when there was a lot of fighting going on in northern Macedonia, that the secretary at that moment where the fighting was going on, the Secretary of State, Mr. Powell, got on a plane and he went to Africa, which apparently concerned some of the people in the capitals of Europe at the time, and thinking that here was something really significant going on, something that deserved some attention from the United States, and we just weren't paying attention.
Yeah.
Has there been any sort of shift, noticeable shift in the foreign policy priorities of the administration towards bumping the Balkans up on the list a little bit more?
I think that the administration has tried to walk back some of the early pronouncements of Condi Rice and others, the National Security Advisor, that the U.S. was going to ultimately get out of the Balkans, and soon. But then Rumsfeld, the Secretary of Defense, not too long ago, began to say the same sort of thing, that ultimately we will withdraw. And I think that the Europeans are kind of scratching their heads and thinking, you know, what's going on here? They're telling us that ultimately they're going to leave the Balkans. They're pulling out of the Kyoto Protocol on the environment. They are talking about a unilateral deployment of a national missile defense. And I think that when President Bush arrives in Europe in a few days, he is going to be greeted by a bunch of European leaders who are quite disgruntled with the general direction of foreign policy that the Bush team has been pursuing. And not the least of it is the fact that they seem to be pulling back, not just from the Balkans, but being much more tentative about a leadership role in the Middle East, in Northern Ireland, and in a lot of other hot spots where the U.S. has generally been quite forward-leaning as a mediator and broker.
We have a caller here. We'll get him in before we find ourselves out of time here in Urbana. Line one. Hello.
Yes, hello. I haven't heard the whole program, and I don't know whether this came up earlier, but does anybody know who is supplying and paying for the arms going to Albanians, be they in Macedonia or in Kosovo? Because surely the Albanian government is too poor to pay for them. Do we know who is?
A lot of the money is coming from smuggling, from Albanian communities, both in the Balkan area and living in the diaspora. Some of it's legitimate money from people who are business people and are sending their revenues back, and some of it's coming from drug running, from prostitution rings, and from other illicit sources. But there really isn't much of a financial constraint in terms of arms buying, and unfortunately, as we were talking about before, the borders in the region are sufficiently porous, and a place like Albania is sufficiently incoherent as a state that it's extremely difficult to get a handle on the flows of arms, on the corruption, and on the money that's being generated as a result.
But I just wonder, ultimately, where these arms are coming from.
They're being bought on the open market. They're coming from places in Central Europe that continue to have arms factories, but the Warsaw Pact isn't around as a market, so they sell them elsewhere. They're coming from Russia. There are lots of Kalashnikovs floating around in Macedonia and Kosovo now. Unfortunately, the arms industries continue to churn out, and there's a lot of older stuff that is very easy to buy if you make the right contacts.
We don't see any other countries who are taking an active role in supplying these arms.
National governments that are actually sending arms?
Right.
As far as I know, there are no national governments that are avowedly involved in trying to arm the Albanians, although the United States and its partners in the Balkans are actively involved in trying to give both financial support and to some extent some arms support to the Macedonian government.
Mm-hmm. Well, this illegitimate money, this drug money and prostitution money, mm-hmm. would that be coming from Albania itself?
A lot of it is coming from Albania. Some of it is being sent directly from Albanian communities in the diaspora. Some of it is coming out of bank accounts in various offshore communities, and it's very difficult. I mean, even in Macedonia, which is a country that has been relatively successful in getting out of Yugoslavia without a war until now, the degree of corruption is quite staggering. I think it's important to keep in mind that throughout the Balkan region, we're talking about countries that lived under communism, where the sense of accountability and the distance between the markets and the government is very, very short.
And I'm going to have to jump in here because I'm a little bit past my time. We're going to have to stop and say to you, Professor Kupchan, thanks very much for talking with us.
My pleasure.
Charles Kupchan, Associate Professor of International Relations at Georgetown University, Senior Fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations in Washington, D.C.